I'm Dave DeWitt. This is Tested from WUNC, a look at what the day's challenges tell us about where we are, what we believe, and who we want to be in North Carolina and the South. Today, it didn't have to go this way. North Carolina has been in a statewide shutdown for nearly 6 long months. The pandemic has demanded a never-ending list of challenges and hardships, and we're still figuring out how exactly to get by. We know the virus doesn't discriminate, but we live in a world that certainly does, and how COVID has changed your life very likely depends on how hard it's hit your community. Whether you define community as your country, state, city, work, or family. For 3,000 communities in North Carolina, COVID has taken someone we love. That number is approaching a devastating 200,000 nationwide. Every day we're learning that it didn't have to be this way in our country, that a series of decisions, non-decisions, blunders, political calculations, and misinformation campaigns over the past 6 months put us here. The pandemic isn't going away anytime soon, and as we look ahead, we ask, what has worked, and perhaps more importantly, what do we need to change?
I think there's a lot of things we could have done to make this better. I do see communities banding together in the absence of a coordinated federal effort. And I see these communities being very concerned and not wanting to lose their elders, not wanting to lose people who are really important in their communities.
Whitney Robinson is an associate professor of epidemiology at the UNC Gillings School of Public Health. Robinson says you can find this concentrated effort in many communities of color. Much of Robinson's research focuses on better understanding racial health disparities. A poll by Ipsos and the Washington Post in late June revealed that nearly a third of Black Americans know somebody who has died from the virus.
People don't want this. In public surveys of public opinion, the people who are most concerned about coronavirus are Black and Latino people because they've seen the effects on their communities. They've seen how devastating this can be. But people don't want this, and people are trying to find the best ways to protect their families and communities while balancing the need to go to work and have childcare and do everything else. And I think that kind of breaks my heart the most. But I see people helping each other. I see people in my neighborhood bringing food to elderly people who haven't been out of their houses in months.
North Carolina has seen these disparities firsthand. 31% of the people who have died of COVID in the state were African American, while Black people make up 22% of the state's population. Robinson says this could have been avoided.
In the United States, we've just let COVID spread. The most heartbreaking thing are studies where geneticists will look back at samples from people who, came in with flu symptoms or something from, January, February, just to try to figure out when COVID first entered the United States. And they can find some of the first times COVID entered the United States, in Seattle, they've done some great work. And the thing is that it wasn't the first time it entered the country, it started spreading. There were numerous times where somebody came in sick, but they didn't end up spreading to somebody. And we had so much advanced warning. So one of the things that could have helped us from having these disparities is not having it have run as rampant in the first place. If we could have quickly contained it and kept it from spreading, then this might be more moot.
I watch these Trump rallies and I hear people say they aren't wearing a mask for patriotic reasons or something like that. And I think to myself, it's highly likely that individual hasn't been directly affected by the pandemic. They haven't seen a loved one get sick or go to the hospital or possibly pass away. And as you mentioned, it's highly more likely that members of Black and Latino families have been personally affected. And that really has a strong impact, it seems like.
I mean, it has a huge impact. I myself have lost a family member. I'm crying a little bit right now. And just thinking about even, people I know, most of the other people I know, even at my university who've lost family members are Black. And I know a lot of our Latino neighbors who've been affected. And also white people too. I think a lot of people aren't talking about it. I think there is still some shame. So I think that's another element. Sometimes people say, it only affects people with pre-existing conditions or who are older. But We're all going to have pre-existing conditions at some point.
Right.
We're all going to get older. We all know somebody we love who has diabetes. Their lives matter. Their lives are important.
Did you ever think, from what you knew of this sort of health systems in this country, that this country would have done such a poor job of managing this pandemic? And I'm thinking of like the FDA and the CDC, and you know, we've seen sort of a withering away of trust in those entities, not just among the public, but among scientists. Did you ever think the country and those organizations would do such a poor job of leadership and just laying the groundwork for us to be able to manage this?
I wouldn't have predicted this. And I think most of us have been very shocked to work in public health. There is a long running lack of support for public health and for pandemic control. The thing about pandemics is, you know, people get really focused on them when they're happening. But if you do a good job to contain it, people say, well, that wasn't so bad. And it recedes from memory. You know, I remember in the early 2000s, people were really worried about the first SARS, and we have these waves of remembering. And I do think there are other countries, like there are a lot of Asian countries who have had more waves and a bigger impact from some of these infectious diseases and have been better prepared. And so, you know, I thought, you know, we haven't taken it as seriously. We haven't been as prepared as we could, but there are people in our country. We have a great base of scientists and public health professionals and medical professionals who could be mobilized very quickly. And we have some existing plans that could be mobilized. And so I knew that we wouldn't be as fast and prepared as we could be, especially compared to some of the countries in Southeast Asia, but that once we got focused on it, we have the tools, we have the will, we have the expertise to tackle this. And so to realize that we're not doing that as a country has been really upsetting.
A lot of people have made the connection between the pandemic and the rise of sort of racial justice efforts and protests. Do you see a connection between those two?
I do. I mean, when we say Black Lives Matter, we don't just mean in terms of interactions with police. We mean Black Lives Matter in terms of the coronavirus. Black Lives Matter in terms of just people's well-being and security in, you know, feeling confident about staying safe and keeping their kids safe and their families safe. I think the confluence of a lot of the protests in the aftermath of George Floyd's death and, you know, people publicizing Ahmaud Arbery's death and the extent to which official systems didn't really seem to care about our lives, where they didn't really seem outraged like our lives matter. I think there's parallels with COVID and with people kind of downplaying the importance of these lives lost. These people's lives mattered.
Have you seen anything, or whether it's sort of epidemiological or sociological, that gives you hope about us being able to manage our way through these, through the pandemic and through racial justice issues? I mean, is there anything that you see and think, you know, that's something we can cling to and help us get through this?
Honestly, the thing that gives me most hope is my neighborhood association. I live in the North Side neighborhood of Chapel Hill, which is a historically Black neighborhood in Chapel Hill. We have a really active center, the Jackson Center, in North Side, that's not for profit, that's really about representing the interests of the community and preserving the history of the neighborhood. And they've just been really active. They set up like meal deliveries and outside walks, and I've consulted with them, and they have newsletters early on to talk about, you know, what this is, what prevention you can do, what you should do if you get sick, how to apply for unemployment. And they're just people who work in that center are from the neighborhood, and they're really taking care of each other.
Whitney Robinson is an associate professor of epidemiology at the UNC Gillings School of Public Health. Hang tight, more in a moment. Thank you.
Tested is a production of North Carolina Public Radio WUNC. And this is a good time to say thanks to everyone who supports WUNC. Whether you're an individual donor or a business, we can't say thank you enough for providing us with the resources and opportunity to serve the state of North Carolina with up-to-the-minute news and information. Everyone at WUNC is working around the clock to do just that at this unique and perilous moment in our history. And we couldn't manage without your help. So thanks, and if you are able, please go to WUNC.org if you want to donate for the first time or to maybe increase your support.
For weeks now, wildfires have raged across the West Coast, decimating millions of acres. Hundreds of thousands have had to evacuate their homes as crews from across the country continue to fight and contain the flames. Christy Adams is a public information officer with the North Carolina Forest Service. So far, the agency has sent 17 people to help with the fires in California.
We're all aware there are many western states that have needs right now, and we're mobilizing. We do not hesitate to, you know, send our people who have put themselves out there as being willing to do that. It is something that other agencies do not hesitate to help us with here in North Carolina when we need it. We had lots of crews, lots of resources coming from out of state when we had the wildfires in 2016. We've had numerous out-of-state personnel come in and assist us with hurricane recovery. So, you know, that's just part of the unity and the brotherhood, the family of Forest Service, regardless of what state you are part of.
Adams says more employees are scheduled to be dispatched out to the West Coast in the coming days. Meanwhile, she urges everyone to start taking precautions here in North Carolina as we head into the fall wildfire season. More than 100,000 acres have burned from wildfires in North Carolina in recent years, close to 78,000 acres burned in 2016 alone. It's far less than the millions ablaze out west right now, but the State Forest Service advises people to adopt easy habits to prevent more flames.
You know, it's as simple as keeping your lawn mowed. Keep your property as clean and clear of vegetative fuel and debris as you possibly can. If you have anything flammable, such as a propane tank that is adjacent to your home, it's a good idea to move that away from the perimeter of your home. It's reducing your risk and increasing, you know, the chances that your property can survive a wildfire incident. A lot of people feel powerless. And in actuality, you know, you're not.
For more information and tips on wildfire protection, go to ncforestservice.gov. That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Dave DeWitt. Charlie Shelton-Orman is our producer. Lindsay Foster-Thomas is the executive producer. Thanks for listening.